This is an I Am Listening exclusive podcast.
99% of people are decent human beings who know what to do, the right thing. They don't have to be told. They can just be enabled, be set free, be the voice, be the person that they want to be, and have the government at their side, on their back, saying, we're going to help you.
Hello and welcome to this little mini series with me, Kaylee.
And me, Liz.
This is the Tread Lightly podcast with the Raynham Eco Hub. And in this mini series, we are delving into local politics.
With the general election just around the corner, we hope that you find this episode interesting and insightful as we interview the MP candidates for Gillingham and Raynham about their policies and their thoughts on all matters relating to politics and the environment.
Hello and welcome back to this episode with me, Kaylee.
And me, Liz.
And for this episode, we have Stuart Bourne, who is standing for the general election 2024 as a candidate for the Lib Dems in Gillingham and Raynham. Hello.
Hello to you both and hello to everybody out there, yes.
Are you all right?
I'm good. Yeah, all set for the campaign. We're getting going. So it's real now. You know, we always thought it was
going to happen. It is actually happening.
Yes.
A bit quicker than we thought, though.
A little bit unexpected, I have to admit. I mean, I did think it was going to be in the autumn, but it's now and I'm happy to get stuck in because I desperately think we need some change in this country.
Yeah, 100%.
So the quicker the election comes, the quicker we can find out the result and the quicker we can progress.
And you can wear shorts and T-shirts on your campaign trail, not coats and hats and gloves.
That's always
that
the best.
No, yeah, that is good.
It depends if they like my legs or not because sometimes I get some comments. I have got quite nice calves, but...
That is part of your
his manifesto,
isn't it? Vote for me, look at my legs.
Vote Stu, vote for Stu's calves.
So for people who have not met you, not heard of you, I would really love you to just grace us with your story of who are you as Stuart Bourne and what the heck are you doing running for an MP in Gillingham and Raynham?
Yeah, so I was born in Medway. I was born in All Saints Hospital in Chatham. Grew up in Lawswood. I've got friends and family in Medway and I've just completely in love with the place. We originally moved to Gillingham with my soon-to-be wife then when we lived together. And then after a period in London where I worked at Buckingham Palace for the Queen as a gardener, I then moved back to Medway because we couldn't think of any better place to live. And I moved to Raynham in 2019, just before lockdown.
Just before COVID, yeah.
Yeah, scary times. But it was great because I think, not that sounds bad, but I think it really opened up my eyes to the importance of community. And that was what really sort of got me going back into politics. I originally got into politics when I was in my 20s, when you're idealistic. And it was actually the environment that got me into politics.
I never knew that.
It was back in the early 2000s, 2004, 2005. And at the moment, the Labour government were debating whether nuclear power should be part of the energy programme. And as someone who was already right there realised the importance of decarbonising our power supplies, I knew that, though not perfect, nuclear power had a position to play at the time. So I remember writing a quite stern, I wouldn't say a stern letter to my local MP then, a lovely man called Jonathan Shaw, iron out that we should, for the environment, for our long-term future, we need to make sure we don't get rid of nuclear power altogether. And quite surprisingly, he wrote me a really lovely letter back.
Your MP wrote back? That's incredible.
I know, it's shock horror, I know. He wrote me back and engaged me with the idea, really took on board what I was listening. And before I could get to catch a breath, I was sort of being dragged into the local politics and helped campaign him because it felt important that he came out and sort of listened to what I had to say. So it really, so environmental issues really were important to me at the start. And that's what drew me on originally into campaigning, into politics. My political journey has travelled, and when I was a Labour Party member back then, I'm now a Lib Dem member, and I have to say, it's much more of a comfortable family for me to be in, and I think key to that is Lib Dems have had environmental policy as sort of their bread and butter from the beginning. I mean, back in the 80s when they first were formed, they had one of the strongest and strictest environmental policies come up. So it's like, I would always say that the Lib Dems were green before being green was cool. but now it's... Now, yeah. So now I'm sort of...
That's why you switched over from Labour to Lib Dems.
Yeah, I think it was part of the environment, part of... I was never a big fan of Jeremy Corbyn and his attitude and his sort of philosophy. So Lib Dems became my natural home and I've never looked back.
So, but why now are you thinking... Because I'm not going to, like, sugarcoat this. Being an MP must be, like, next level insane... job. Why would you want to put yourself through that?
I think the part of me is it's the challenge. Part of me feels like I have always felt a sense of duty to my community, to my people, to everybody. That's sort of always sort of felt into my lifestyle, the times of jobs I've had and stuff like that, and my love for volunteering and stuff like that. And so this feels like this is almost the ultimate sense of doing your duty, because you're standing yourself, you're putting yourself forward in front of people and saying, these are my values, this is what I believe in, this is the direction I think we should go as a country, listen to me, vote for me, and hopefully together we'll get there. And yeah, it's just one of those sort of powerful motives. Like, I feel like it's, I don't say it's my calling, but it just feels like there's like a sort of mission in me to be that sort of spokesperson.
I think what's really interesting is you've kind of segued beautifully into our first question.
Okay.
Like an absolute pro that you asked, Joe. So we spoke last week with Philip, who was from Christian Climate Action, and he was arrested for protesting peacefully with a sign outside of a courthouse. And he shared with us the context in which he protested is prohibited from being shared as part of his defence. The context of the reason for protesting is that it's 50 degrees in Delhi, with water being restricted and piled up bodies of loved ones dying from heat strain caused by climate change. And yet the most polluting companies and the governments are failing to take action. So could you tell us, if you were to be MP, what you would do to support local people in Gillingham and Raynham to have their voices heard and to be able to express it freely?
I think, first of all, I'll learn the lesson from the MP that got me into it, is I will answer and talk to people. Get out there, listen to their views. They can always contact me. They can always send me a letter and I'll try and engage with them. And secondly, about that, and really an important issue is the fact that there was, we should always have the right to protest. It's fundamental to what we are as a country and what our democracy has led us there to be. You can go back to 100 years. I mean, I was watching a program about the suffragettes and listening to what they were doing back in 1910 and 1913, and the troubles they had to go through, the arrests, the protest they had to do. It so mirrors today what we'd see about the climate change protest. People are being stigmatised for standing up to what is probably the most important issue of our times at this moment. So the fact that anybody is arrested for that, as long as they're peaceful and respectful, everybody should have the right to report. And I'm incredibly worried about the draconian measures this government's bringing in to tackle people who are British citizens, who have every right to make their voices heard. And if they're being ignored, then they should definitely have the right to protest.
I can't understand how freedom of speech, right? I was brought up by a mum who was like, you absolutely, as long as you are respectful and you are kind and you're courteous, you absolutely are able to have freedom of speech. That is what we have fought for in this country, that you are able to say and speak up for, especially people who are struggling to speak for themselves, like enable people, give them a platform to be able to speak from. And it worries me when we spoke with him. It was like, it was actually really emotional listening to his story. And I think I was just left with more questions. I was left with being more confused as to, like, how can this even be? Do you know what I mean? It's 2024. How can you not be able to have your voice in a way that's...
Explain what makes you feel so passionate about something to go on and protest for it, and you're not allowed to use it in defence, let alone then trying to stop you protesting in the first place.
And this sort of the language that they use, that they're disruptive, they're infecting people's lives, that's fundamentally what protest is for. You know, again, if you look back to the examples of the suffragettes, they broke windows, they disrupted meetings, they literally smashed glass in picture frames, and we're seeing exactly the same things happening today, and yet somehow they're evil, these environmental protesters are evil and suffragettes were good.
Well, the suffragettes were bad at the time, though. Exactly. They wanted to silence the suffragettes.
But ask the question, like, why did they get to that? They didn't start off with that. They didn't start by chucking themselves in front of horses and dying. Ultimately, like, who wants to do that? People don't want to actually do that. So what did they do before that? And what did you do to enable that to happen? Do you know what I mean? That's the question that kind
why
of makes me go...
Why did they not feel heard before they sat in the road and glued themselves to the M25?
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think the key message there is, as an MP, for your MP, I will be there. I'll always be there to listen to your views and understand what's important to you.
And we will gladly share them because, as you know, as a community that we've got in Raynham, that people are really vocal about what they want and what they kind of want to see from their candidate. So I'm glad that you are able to have broad shoulders to listen. So that's good to know. One of the people that we spoke to in the previous series one, actually, was a guy called Tom from Kent Wildlife Trust. And he spoke to us about the fact that the UK is one of the world's most nature depleted countries. And Kent is facing an insect Armageddon. Just get your head around that word just for one second. Insane. So with so much of Gillingham and Raynham's wildlife habitat is being lost to development, how do you plan to recognise and mitigate the impact that meeting the housing crisis has on nature and wildlife?
Well, again, the Lib Dems understand this is an important issue. We are losing a lot of our biodiversity. We are losing a lot of our countryside. We have very strict goals to get back to a wildlife of about 30% of protected land by 2030. We have these set goals. That's the aims for it. We want by 2050 to double that. So there'll be twice as much protected land in the UK as. But we have to meet the housing crisis. We have to build homes for people. And there's things you can do that. There's so simple things to do. So a lot of times when developers come out and there are rules about planning, there'll be a biodiversity net gain plus. And so the idea is that at the most, I think you can get about 10% plus net diversity. So the idea is that if you build a field, knock down a field to build some houses, you have to create another field and a bit 10% extra to cover that biodiversity loss. So you overall, in theory, you're gaining 10%.
And is this through carbon credits or is that physically on the site?
Well, this is where it gets tricky. So a lot of developers will do that. They'll build a field somewhere and put some trees in it and claim that what it is. What we're suggesting is you can actually do on-site biodiversity net gain, where you can actually look at how the housing estate's laid out, what can be done about putting wildlife nature reserves and stuff like that, sort of ponds, trees, habitats. So actually on site, you're still maintaining that biodiversity and plus gaining that. And I've spoken to people in the party that in theory, we can get up to about 20% plus on net biodiversity gain on site.
On site.
On site. But we've also got a new target. We're saying for the big developments, for the really big ones, we want to see 100% biodiversity net gain. So the idea that, again, if you build a field, build on a field, we want the developers to set aside two fields for biodiversity. So we actually overall gain it. So we stop, we get the housing built, but we reduce the biodiversity loss in the country. So there are things you can do. You can also do carbon neutral building and stuff like that and build building regulations that have sensible solutions like bat holes or
hedgehog holes.
They are so simple. All you have to do is be prepared to mandate them and put up and say to developers, no, you can build your houses, but you will do it to the regulations that we want to do to ensure that the wildlife is not destroyed by your
housing. That's really interesting. And it's really interesting that from a Lib Dem perspective, you've got those targets set out quite so clearly, like your numbers have been crunched on.
Yeah. As I said, green party policies for the Lib Dems is like bread and butter. We've so many conferences we've ironed these out. We have a very good strong team and we've got lots of people who get involved on all kinds of level, on the farming side of things, on those things that can feed into that sort of information.
Because we've got, talking about the housing thing, like we've got housing developments here in Raynham where as part of those developments, I can name one on Bevingrave, right? The restrictions of people buying those houses were they had to have bat boxes because there was bats that was already occupied in that area before building. And I know through friends and through family living in Raynham that they refused to buy the house because for whatever reason, they didn't want to put a bat box up there. I know it was questionable, but anyway. And then it transpired that the people that ended up up buying it, said, oh, don't worry about it, they don't enforce it anyway. And so it's kind of like, how do you then kind of, once the houses are built, yeah, that's great, crack on, but then they're not actually, no one's checking in on that sort of stuff, do you know what I mean?
And that, and that's an issue about underfunding of the agencies to look after, especially local government, because the local government are in charge of enforcing these planning regulations. But anybody experienced any time in Medway Council knows that how underfunded they are. The officers just don't have the time. We've had experiences ourselves where we've known that developers have planted trees.
And the trees are dead within the year. Trees are dead. Oh my God, I know. And there's nothing they can do about it.
Because the council have said to us, well, we haven't got the time to go out and inspect all these. Can you keep an eye on them? And that's the reality is you can't have that. We haven't got enough people on the ground to enforce these regulations. So part of our plan is to ensure local government is properly funded again, to ensure they've got enough people to not only have got these regulations that we pass in Westminster, they're enforced on the local level.
They don't get mugged off afterwards by going, yeah, of course I will, and then they just don't. That's insane, isn't it? My next question is kind of related to the housing crisis. So obviously, we're going to have more cars, but as you probably already know, Raynham has been in an AQMA, which is an air quality management area, since 2010. And whilst car emissions are generally improving, the volume and the size of the vehicles slow moving through our town, especially during peak hours, is getting worse. So how would you mitigate against this and the impact of this as part of a new local plan?
Well, the key message there is that we will bring back the 2030 target to have known only electric vehicles as new cars. So the Tories have scrapped that target. They've moved it away to 2035. We're going to bring it back to the 2030 target to ensure that we've got more electric vehicles on the road and therefore air pollution is reduced. But ultimately, we have to tackle the bigger problem, which is the lack of funding in public transport. We have to look at that and say, how can we reduce the number of cars on the road effectively? You can't build more roads around Raynham, especially around Raynham, but even in any places in Medway and Gillingham, there's just not enough space to build a road. So you have to look at the concept. You have to reduce the amount of cars on there. And so we have to go back to public transport, and public transport in Medway and across the country has been so badly underfunded that we just have a bus network that's just not fit to purpose in Medway. 100%. We try and get electric low emission buses and then they get sent somewhere else. It's just a diabolical. So I think the key message there is we're going to bring back effective investment in public transport, look into the long-term solutions in terms of the train system, because we are blessed with 5 train stations in Medway, and we should be having a nice integrated transport system that you could hop on the train in Raynham, get off at Chatham, get a bus.
If it was
up,
on time.
Oh, if it was on time. And get a bus up to Lawswood, all in for one ticket. Wouldn't that make perfect sense? So there's lots of things we can do, but it's important that we have the community buy-in as well. And so it's not, you can't quite use the sort of same draconian methods that we've seen in other places, because people will just get angry and refuse.
What does the word draconian mean?
Authoritarian, or sort of strong-handed, if you know what I mean, sort of.
But a bit old-fashioned as well, a bit old school.
Yeah, it's sort of like telling people what to do rather than bringing them along with you.
Right, okay. I understand. I'm glad that you brought up about the buses, because it is an absolute bugbear of mine that I have lots of family that don't drive. In fact, me and one sister, I'm the eldest of 7, right? And there's only 2 of my sisters that drive. So me and my other sister. And so I am constantly saying to my sisters, like, just hop on a bus. And they're like, are you having a laugh? Like, they live all over Medway. Like, are you having a laugh? Have you ever caught a bus? And I haven't caught a bus for a really long time. But basically, the feedback is not just from my own family, but from like people locally in Raynham saying they don't turn up on time. They actually don't turn up on time, and they are so expensive that if you've got a family that's, you know, even 2 adults, 2 kids, like, that costs a lot of money to be able to get from A to B. Do you know what I mean? Like,
it's absolutely true. It's the public transport, and especially buses, have been almost clean drive by the bus companies. They don't care about, they want to care about is profits and dividends. They don't care about the people. We need to re-radicalise that. And the Lib Dems have got a very strong public transport policy that we want to implement. And that includes proper, efficient bus system. That means that you can hop on, get a cheap fare and get there, and it will bring cars off the road and ensure that those people who don't want to use the bus, they'll be travelling quicker and there'll be less air pollution and everybody's happier.
Buses are cool. That'll be good when that's the day that we say buses are cool.
Buses are cool.
Do you want to live more sustainably, but you just don't know where to start?
Did you, like me, sign up for Veganuary and accidentally buy chicken sausages on day 2?
Does the whole eco thing leave you feeling confused and sometimes overwhelmed? If so, this is the podcast for you.
Remember to check us out on our socials on Facebook and Instagram, The Raynham Eco Hub. Next question is, on the 20th of October 2021, 200, just let that sink in, 265 MPs voted with the government to reject an attempt to toughen up the approach to discharging sewage into the seas and rivers in the UK. Our current MP voted to allow sewage to be discharged. How would you vote in a similar vote if you were MP? Now, before I let you answer that, I'm still boggled by the process by which you sit in the House of Commons and they have a discussion about putting poo in the sea, and they go, right, everyone who says yay for poo, yay, and everyone who says no, no, and then they put their hands up. Like, how... There's two questions.
There's
how
a meme would, for the Lib
how
Dems,
would you
isn't it?
Vote?
Yay for poo.
Yay for poo. But do you know what I mean? I'm boggled by my brain to understand how, what goes on behind that to go, yeah, I think poo for yay, the seas. Like, what? What?
Right, to answer your second question, I think the problem we have is there's too much politics at the moment in politics. There's not enough natural leaders. And I think that's the danger we have, where we have this two-party system seen in Westminster, where either you're Labour or Conservative, and they're at loggerheads together, always fighting. What you need is more voices around the table, more reasoned voices around the table, where compromise... Somehow compromise is a dirty word now, that sometimes you have to compromise your views to make sure what the government goal is. And it does generally baffle me too that anybody would vote for poo, really.
But there must be a hidden story that I'm not... that we're not hearing, because I can't understand that.
It's almost something as petty as, we can't let the opposition win.
What?
It will be that particular motion, I believe it was a poo motion. It was a poo motion. Was put forward by the opposition.
Oh my God.
So it was, and so the Conservatives will come in and say, oh, well, we out of habit, we can't vote for that. That's the opposition motion. That's their idea. We can't be seeing that. So, and they'll say, no, we're just out of default, we will not vote for it.
Jurors just dropped as yours, if that is the truth, that is insane.
I thought you was going to say it was all like tied up in money and like trustees and stakeholders. That's what I thought it was going to be. That was the hidden sort of like story.
There could be some who, you know how the murky world of politics, they have donors who are water company executives, or you don't know.
You just don't know.
You just don't know. They declare it, but often these people are just under the radar. But my experience with politics, especially Westminster politics, is... sometimes it really is depressingly petty.
Is it like when your teenager only wants to wear a short skirt because it's cold?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Is it like that? I will definitely get my hair cut short because you like it long.
And there'll also be other things. There'll be factors in stuff like, oh, we can't vote for that because they'll put that on a leaflet and a vote against us and stuff like that. So they might abstain, which is, say, they don't have a vote yay or nay. So they can say, well, I didn't vote against it, but you didn't vote for it,
yeah,
did you?
Well, that's the same as kind of bullying, isn't it? If you're not standing up and saying no to the bullies, yeah, you're as good as empowering the bullies, right? So back to the question of, are you yay for poo or nay for poo?
Well, I can definitely say 100% I will vote for any motion, any poo motion that stops sewage going into the Vaal River. I mean, anybody who knows me and seen what I've been out campaigning is, one of the key issues that I've been fighting for is to clean up the River Medway.
Yeah.
We did some testing, the Lib Dems did some testing, and we found dangerous levels of E. coli.
E. coli, I saw that.
At the Strand.
Mad.
And at St Mary's Island. I would add that, of course, you're not quite sure if that's the strain that will make you sick, but it is an indicator that the fact there is sewage being dumped in our River Medway. And this is a river that children do water sports in. There are rowing clubs, there are sailing clubs, there are swimming clubs. There's people use that. People don't think they use
for
the River
leisure.
Medway.
Yeah, for leisure.
Absolutely. And for businesses as well.
Isn't the Strand Lido filled with water from the river?
I'm pretty sure they all filter at that. It's been tested.
I saw their post that they sent it off and tested it, which they were very clever to do that, because I think a lot of people, because it's the only salt water Lido, isn't it?
Yeah.
Fresh out the river, but cleaned up. Yeah, fair enough, they did.
And that's why one of our number of key policies is to tackle the sewage scandal. And we've got lots of measures to do that. And fundamentally, the first one is to get rid of Ofwat, which is the regulatory body that looks after water.
Right.
It's just not fit for purpose. It doesn't control the water companies. The water companies get away with it. You have, instances where water company executives are wining and dining executives from Ofwat.
Well, that is awful.
You know, everybody sees that's just dangerous. So we'll get rid of them, get a new regulatory body in that's got real teeth. Secondly, we have to look at the model of water companies and whether it is sensible for them to care more about paying dividends to their shareholders than actually investing in the infrastructure that we need. So we're going to plan to take them out of private ownership and put them into public benefit companies, which is a technical jargon, but essentially it means a non-for-profit company. So they can charge for services, but all money has to go back in investment. So all those billions of pounds that the water companies have taken us from our pockets, from our water bills, and given to shareholders paying their dividends, we ensure that billions of pounds were actually where it should have been, and that's invested in better sewage networks, more reservoirs, so we don't have to have water shortages, and to ensure that we have proper sewage systems so we don't get the stuff in the river. The other major policy, which I think is very key, so obviously we have the blue flags for beaches, so you 100% know that a beach is safe to use. There's question marks about how effective it is. They only test it during the summer period, so technically the water companies could fill those beaches with all kinds of stuff in the winter. But what we're suggesting is we have those blue flags for rivers, especially rivers that we know that are bathing in. So ensure that we know that the rivers that are around our country that people use on a regular basis is just as clean as the beaches as well. So blue flag rivers, that's an
interesting
really cool one.
That sounds amazing.
And we make sure the environmental agency has the investment to actually monitor it. And that's the other thing where I was going back to the fact that government's been underinvested is the environment agency just doesn't have enough inspectors to go out and test all these waters and stuff.
Do they have enforcement powers, the environment agency?
They have the laws enforced, but they don't have the... Well, I don't know if they've been told not to enforce it, but I don't think they have the resources numbers to go out and maybe Wowzers. even just like the lawyers to fight the water companies. You know, these water companies have a lot of staff on them.
A lot of clout, right? Yeah, such a good point that even if they are up to no good, what can you do about it if you haven't got decent
so money? So, we'll give off real teeth, give the environmentalists a real teeth to take on these water companies.
Jeez. I mean, I'm a bit blown away, really, because water is... probably one of my biggest things, really.
Fear, isn't it?
I have to say, when you think of it logically, it was the most worst decision ever to privatise water companies.
I don't get it. I've said it before, but I just don't understand it.
I'm not a, you know, I'm a Lib Dem, so I'm not for state ownership of everything like Labour. But part of market forces is the ability to choose your provider.
Yeah.
Electricity makes sense. If you're not happy with your electricity provider, you can move to another one. You can, in the green ones. And it has been a great way to promote green energy because certain energy providers have been saying, we're green, we're 100% green. And so people like me can make those logical choices and say, right, I'm going to go with them.
It.
You can't change your water company. You can't. You're stuck with it.
Awful stuff. You just keep having to pay your bills and so
on. And they can put prices up and you can't change it. It doesn't make any sense in terms of privatisation.
It's madness. I guess for me, right, one of the biggest questions that when we said that we were going to do this political series, one of the first questions that I really, really wanted to ask anybody that came was about the power imbalance and just recognizing that you will have power. And I think part of that whole conversation is at first recognizing that you have it. And how do you deal with that imbalance of power and how do you share that out with communities, some that are informal, some that are formal, you know, other organizations and whatever? How do you share that so that it is not all sat in your pocket?
I think where it comes into is why I've sort of become a Lib Dem is fundamentally the word is trust. Lib Dem trusts people. Labour traditionally have favoured state ownership and state control and central government telling people what to do. The Tories, on the other hand, believe power should rest in basically their hands and everybody else can be ignored because as long as we're in power, we don't care. The Lib Dems trust people. We trust fundamentally that people know what to do and what to do and do the right thing. And as a positive person, that feels quite empowering. So that's how I would come and become that MP, is actually trust people. So listen to people, ask their opinions, get their feedback, find out what really matters to them and try and implement that at Westminster. The great thing about the Lib Dems is we have a very good respect for local communities. We're a local party. We believe in communities. And so that the MPs have that power that we can say, actually, this is right for my community and this is right for my people. So I don't know. It's like as soon as you said that, I had that phrase from Spider-Man: "With great power comes great responsibility."
I was going to say that to you.
It's true.
And so my greatest responsibility will be to try and be the representative of Gillingham Rainham and listen to the people and be their voice in Westminster.
That's an important statement.
And I think
isn't it?
That is probably ultimately that's probably at the top of your job description, if MPs have a job description, is to be the voice of the people. But I think more for me, it's about, I don't necessarily need you to do everything for me as a constituent, right? Because I am skilled and I'm able and I'm willing to roll my sleeves up and act on the things that I really care about. I need you to essentially not put barriers in my way, to not get in the way of me being able to do those things and kind of unlock doors that I need unlocking. And when I do need your help and I say, hello, can I have a hand with this, please? Because this is out of my hands. That does sit within your kind of remit. That you're able to either help me do that or, you know, do that. But I don't need you to do things for me. I need you to be able to enable me to be able to do a lot of things myself, because I think our services are so absolutely stretched that we need to be able to empower and enable people to start taking some action on their own, you know?
Exactly. And I said, that's why I'm a Lib Dem, because I would trust you and I would trust the majority of people to do that. People are smarter than people keep credit for it. I know it's very difficult when you walk down some of the high streets to think that, but fundamentally people are, you know, 99% of people are decent human beings who know what to do, the right thing. They don't have to be told. They can just be enabled, be set free, be the voice, be the person that they want to be, and have the government at their side, on their back, saying, we're going to help you. So another good example, good leeway to one of our other policies, is about community power. The fact that communities need to be able to not only build, but also make profit from any community energy projects that they do. At the moment, there's a huge amount of barriers for community energy products to come through. There's also the fact that it's very difficult to get onto national grid, and it's very difficult to then actually earn money from that. We want to remove those barriers. We want to make it easier for people and communities to set up their own energy companies, to set up their own little energy communities, feed that money into the national grid, help us and help themselves and turn a profit. It just makes perfect sense that we should get off their back and just let them get on with it.
There are some really good examples where that's happening across the country, actually. Have you seen any of them?
Yeah, I've seen a few, but I think most of them are up in sort of more rural areas, yeah. But I think there's scope for doing it in more urban areas.
Car parks and, you know, proper schools.
I'd like to think like a school or a collection of schools, like a school academy, could actually, you know what? If we put solar panels all on our roofs, got a few generators up there, got some battery supplies, we could put that back into national grid and earn a bit of money.
Make some cash,
for some schools. You know, that makes perfect sense to me. We should make the schools be able to do that. Another example of that is one of our policies is to ensure that any individuals who are doing home improvements to improve their house for energy, whether it's insulation, solar panels, heat pumps, all of that, they can offset the cost of that from their income tax.
Oh, amazing.
So essentially, we're going to give a tax break to people who want to invest in their local energy, because in the long term, it helps our country and it just makes more sense.
So, I mean, I don't want to be poo-pooing on this, but you've got to have money to do that in the first place, mate.
Yeah, no, totally. You need those investments. And we're going to also invest heavily in those sort of community funds that help that. But we're saying for those people who can, let's give them a helping hand. Because if there's people on the borderline saying, I would like to install solar panels, but I just can't quite afford it, why shouldn't they get a tax break and allow them to build those solar panels on their roofs, save themselves some money and save the planet at the same time?
Wowzers. I've really enjoyed chatting to you, and we've never really spoken about politics, so it's been really interesting to have this conversation.
Stewborn with his politics hat on.
Yeah, like I've just never seen this side of you, so it's been quite interesting. So thank you much for coming and giving us your time and sharing. Good luck in your campaign trail, and we look forward to seeing what happens on July. Well, it'll be July 5th when we wake up, really, honestly, won't it?
You're not staying up.
I mean, I probably do want to do an all-nighter, but...
Oh, I'll be there all night. And
where will you be, look like?
I'll be in Black Lion Leisure... Oh, sorry,
No, always call it Black Lion. It is not Medway Park.
Good. It's Black Lion. I'll be in Black Lion Leisure Centre up... As anybody knows me, I don't drink caffeine, but on polling days, I do drink a lot of caffeine.
So you do, right.
I'll be up there with my... Diet Cokes.
One of our WhatsApp groups said, anyone want to pull an all-nighter? And we went, yeah, we do. And then whether we will or not, I don't know. Maybe we should do a podcast like a live
an all-night podcast.
A live all-nighter.
It's going to be an interesting election, one way or another. There's going to be some very pivotal moments,
do you think,
in there. It's, there is the comparison back to 97, and I remember as a young kid there, staying up, I actually did watch the famous Portillo moment. Have you heard the
No, tell me.
So Michael Portillo.
Who is Michael Portillo?
So you might
beautiful name, by the way.
You might remember him or from the wonderful TV shows that I'm a addict to, is The Train Journeys Across Britain. He was a...
On your own, babes.
Okay,
on your
just me. A Conservative MP. He was a Defence Secretary. He was a rising member of the Tory party.
Did he go to prison?
No, not that guy. I know, it's a magic... You confuse a lot of them, but no, it's not. That guy.
I walked right into that one, didn't I?
And he was a rising star, and he famously lost his seat in 97, and it was all filmed, and you could see his face drop, and it was such a shock moment.
He wasn't expecting to lose
I wasn't expecting him to lose it. He lost it, and so from since then it became a sort of a political catchphrase. Who's going to have their Portillo moment? So who's going to be the next big government minister?
Surprise one.
And so again, in this election, you're seeing a lot of the big names quitting.
They're not even standing, are they?
Yeah, I think part of that is they don't want to be known. They don't want to have that Portillo moment, that the fact that you're standing and you're losing.
They're going before they're pushed.
Exactly.
It's the thing. So on the night then, so you'll be staying up. You will be pulling an all-nighter with your Diet Coke. Has Diet Coke got caffeine in?
I hope so. By the way, other soft drinks are available before I alienate anyone.
And obviously from a recycled can, not from a plastic bottle, obviously.
Obviously.
So you'll be pulling an all-nighter at Black Lion. And is Black Lion only open then to people that are standing and party members? Who can go there?
So to the count, you can be a candidate and you can be a guest of the candidate. So wives and can come
along. Lovely.
Yeah, the agents, and then you can have a set number of people per candidate.
Groupies.
So there'd be count agents and stuff like that who are there to assist you. So I don't want to get into my political geek on bit more. So there's a lot of information that political activists like to get from accounts. So you can monitor the count during the process, get an idea of who's going to win, who's going to lose. But you can also be monitoring where you're doing well. So certain polling stations that you know you should be doing well in,
you literally stand and watch though, don't you?
Yep. And you're also there to make sure that they're doing the process correctly. So it's
scrutiny as well.
Scrutiny. And that's the beautiful part of this country, is that, you know, we have secret ballots, but the processed count is completely above board.
I thought there was something more technical to it, but when I went to the count for the local election one last year, you literally stand and go 1, 2. They were doing a tally chart on a clipboard, and I was like, I thought we were between 2024, but
the great thing, I mean, another thing I like there is on the local election, where you have split candidates so you have more than one candidate for each ward, that they have to stick it onto a board, don't they? And so they can count across. They've got split votes. So,
see what you mean, yeah.
I political geek that I am, it's a fascinating evening for me. So I'll be there seeing all the action, seeing the controversies, seeing what possibly can happen in Medway and what big changes are going nationally as well.
Ooh. Wonderful. Thank you. Thanks, I hope all of that goes well. And I hope after this campaign trial, whatever it's called.
It's a trial.
What is it? play on words there. That you get some rest.
I am looking forward to a bit of break.
Wonderful. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
We hope that you really enjoyed listening to this little mini series on politics, and that you have also been able to get a little bit more in-depth information to help inform your decision in the next coming general election.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode and asked just three things of you to help our podcast grow and help us to learn. So please subscribe and rate the podcast. Please share with your friends and family. And please do follow us and engage on our socials on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, and now on TikTok. Thank you guys, and we'll see you next time.
This has been an I Am Listening exclusive podcast. For more information, head over to our website, iam-listening.co.uk.